welcome to this week's edition of the Breakout Hockey Program. My name is Adam Summers, and as always, I'd like to thank you very much for listening to the show. This is, in fact, a show which has not been around for quite a while. It's been, I always joked around that this was a rather infrequent podcast, although you go back several years and it was at least weekly. But it's definitely lived up to that infrequent moniker. Over the past season or so. Without getting into too much detail, real life stuff has certainly gotten in the way of being able to do this show on as much of a regular basis as I would like. The good news is, I think that's changing. I think that I'm going to be doing this show definitely more often than I have in the past. I'd say probably at least a couple times a month through the end of this calendar year, and hopefully as the new calendar year 2016 rolls around, back to a weekly format, and sort of keep everything rolling. Also getting back to the idea of this being a 30-minute podcast. There's no reason to overstay our welcome on this show. There's plenty of other shows that do that. And I think that given the format of the show and given the way that I try to approach things, somewhat in the vein of the sadly and dearly departed show on Sirius XM NHL Network Radio, The War Room with Mick Kern and Peter Burse, I have always kind of thought of this show as somewhat similar to that. I would never say as good or as polished, but just in the idea that if you're looking for the, I don't know, the typical sports radio take on things, that this show may not be for you. Also, be aware, if you are a new listener, that while this show will, for this week and throughout the season, focus on the NHL, there will also be episodes throughout the season that are going to focus on non-NHL hockey, particularly the KHL, Continental Hockey League, which I am a big fan of, I guess you could say, and I spent a lot of time watching that league as well. So do not be surprised if you subscribe to this show, which you can, by the way, go to iTunes and search out the Breakout Hockey Program, and you will be able to subscribe to this show. Or you can go to breakouthockey.podomatic.com and go back, and you can subscribe to the show. You can also, through that website, go back and listen to any of our shows dating back to 2010, I believe. It's actually pretty funny. If you go back and listen to the first show that we did, I think it was right after Don Fehr took over the NHLPA, and it was sort of all about how, hey, in a couple years, a lockout may be coming, and needless to say, that ended up happening. There will also be episodes throughout the season where there may be a guest host, Mike Sempervivi, my co-host on the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare at f4wonline.com, will certainly join me throughout the season. There will be what I should probably trademark as a name. There will be a simulpod or two of sorts with me and Mike doing this show. You could also expect a few guests through the season, most likely Dennis Gorman, who covers the New York-based teams primarily for the AP and several other outlets, and Ryan Pike probably as well, who covers the Calgary Flames and really is well-versed on the entire league. They've been on the show before. I may be volunteering them without them actually knowing that I'm saying this, but I'm fairly confident that they will be happy to join us on the program. So that's sort of the scene set. I guess what you can expect throughout the season. If we're going to move forward, though, we have to look back. And for me, again, for longtime listeners or for people who are just starting to listen, if you know me, you know that I'm a Chicago Blackhawks fan. I am a hockey fan first and foremost, but I will not lie. I am a Chicago Blackhawks fan, one who goes back well before the recent. I guess you can't even really say recent anymore, given that it's almost been 10 years, 7 or 8 years anyway, but the recent turnaround of the team. And this past season was about as good as you can get, at least the culmination of it for me as a fan, to be in the arena in the United Center on the night that the Blackhawks won the Stanley Cup is, as a fan of an individual team, or I think as a hockey fan or a follower of the game of hockey in general, I don't think you can ask for anything more than to be in the building when the Stanley Cup is won, when it's presented, when it's raised, and even more so if it's the team that you follow that wins it. So that was, needless to say, an incredible experience. If you listen to the show on a regular basis, you also know that I go to way too many hockey games. Between NHL, USHL, AHL, I went to 90 hockey games last year. So judge for yourself whether that's a good thing or a sickness. Definitely looking forward to the season getting going. Plenty of live hockey games to attend to. But back to the business in hand, and back to I guess looking at after that went down, the NHL has had, I guess what you could only say is a you could nicely say, if you didn't want to get too deep into it, an interesting off season. The NHL and hockey in general likes to pride itself, and I guess it's more of a myth than anything else, but likes to pride itself on being a sport or a league that doesn't have the problems of other major professional sports. And if that was a myth that was bought into prior to this offseason, I think it's pretty hard for anyone to buy into that after the past few months of this this summer leading into the start of this season. First and foremost, and most disturbingly so, the Patrick Kane situation, the sexual assault investigation, the rape allegations that that have come down, and everything that's sort of fallen out from that, particularly the way it's been handled by the league, the reaction by the Chicago Blackhawks organization. Without going too deeply into it, it has not been a good look. It remains to be seen the long-term damage that's done to the league, the team, the player, by how they've chosen to handle the situation, and obviously by the end result of the situation. It's also been pretty ugly as far as how things have played out fan reaction-wise. It's like I said, it's first and foremost in a summer that's shown that the NHL is really no different than any other sport as far as the issues that it faces with its athletes, with the behavior of its athletes, and with the culture that surrounds the game. You look beyond that, and you look at the Mike Richards situation. You look at the situation that just took place with Zach Kassian. The NHL just came out yesterday, I believe, as I record this on Wednesday morning. The NHL just came out in the past couple days, and as part of a Rick Westhead story at TSN, basically admitted that while they don't believe it's a full-blown crisis, admitted that there is a cocaine problem of some magnitude in the National Hockey League. And again, I wouldn't necessarily say that drug problems in sports are a huge surprise, but again, the NHL has prided itself on not being that type of league, so to speak. And A, I don't think that was really ever true, but B, it's been really it's really hard to argue that myth now. And I think that the NHL, in the form of Bill Daly coming out and speaking about the cocaine problem in the NHL, is an admission of that. You know, you're going to look extremely foolish, which as a league, the NHL doesn't necessarily have the biggest problem doing, sadly, but you're going to look extremely foolish if you just try to act like everything's good and this is just, you know, it's just 23 guys in every team that are, you know, just good guys going to play hockey and all that sort of thing. Beyond that, I guess getting closer to the actual business of hockey and working our way to on-ice stuff, expansion talk certainly took up a lot of air in the proverbial room this summer. The fait accompli, as I think everyone recognizes it as being, the Las Vegas group headed by Bill Foley working its way through the expansion process, and I cannot fathom there being any way that group does not get an NHL team between the 20,000 seat arena that is nearly complete in Las Vegas. The public nature of the NHL's interaction with this potential ownership group, the fact that while not promising a team publicly and while continuing to talk about the process and it's not formal and over the course of the last year or so, the fact that the NHL, via having Gary Bettman there at the press conference, basically threw their support behind the season ticket drive that the Las Vegas ownership group engaged in or began engaging in several months ago, you can connect the dots, and it's a done deal. There's no way that that's not going to happen. In a lot of ways, the more interesting scenario is the bid by the Quebecor group out of Quebec City. With the Videotron Center that was just finished and actually just opened as far as for NHL-level events just a couple of weeks ago with the Montreal and Pittsburgh preseason game in that building. But their bid for a potential expansion team as well, I think that's interesting on so many more levels, particularly because as the NHL opened this expansion process, they were very clear that it wasn't necessarily – well, they're saying, oh, maybe it'll be no teams, but there's no way it's not going to be at least one team, that team being Vegas. But they were very clear that it doesn't necessarily have to be an even number of teams, that they can add Las Vegas, and that's it. You could have 31 teams. That would be okay. And until proven otherwise, until I see an actual press release from the league saying that Quebec City is getting a team, that the Nordiques are coming back, via expansion, to me it just makes far too much sense that would be that the league would like to have that as their ace in the hole, their stalking horse as a potential relocation bid, a potential relocation landing spot, because regardless of what the league will say publicly, there are troubled franchises. Everybody talks about Florida, rightly so. Personally, I think the team to keep a much closer eye on over the next couple of years is the Carolina Hurricanes. Between their inability to find minority ownership to stabilize the financial situation, their inability to – I mean, they've got a hardcore fan base for sure, but that fan base as far as the buying public over the past several years certainly has dwindled as the team has been less than successful. And – you'd have to think that the league, given the way they've operated in the past and given what we know about some of the other cities that don't have an arena yet, that I think they'd be much more keen on adding via expansion, namely Seattle. And given the Canadian dollar situation, which I don't think would necessarily be a problem for a massive corporation like Quebecor that is going to that is bidding for a potential expansion franchise, I think that all those things are very very convenient excuses for the league to maybe only expand by one team and save Quebec City for relocation and hold out the idea of Seattle in a couple of years being the 32nd NHL team. So it'll be interesting to see timeline-wise. They're not coming right out and saying it, but if you read between the lines of what Bettman said throughout this whole process, I think it would be safe to say that if there's going to be an announcement made, it would probably be at some point in December. I was actually reading an article on thefourthperiod.com last night stating that there's some interest by some of the owners of having an expansion franchise or expansion franchises start as soon as next season, the 2016-2017 season. It seems like a very aggressive timeline for an organization to get their entire house in order, whether it be on the business side or the hockey operations side. I would be absolutely shocked if we didn't see the new franchise or franchises start any sooner than the 2017-2018 season. And if and when that happens, something that we'll definitely talk about on the show, and I actually be interested in getting people's feedback when we get to this point. on how the league this time around would carry out an expansion draft. What would be the most fair way? There have been some rumblings that the league would want to have a more aggressive or open expansion draft concept, because if you're asking the ownership groups to ante up $500 million as an expansion fee just to, you know, to gain entry into the league, that you know, those owners sort of a stipulation of being willing to pay that $500 million are probably going to want assurances that they're going to be able to acquire high-end players more quickly than we've seen in previous expansion drafts. And you go through the recent, and when I say recent, say in my lifetime, whether it be the expansion drafts in the 90s and in the early 2000s with the most recent swath of teams, those teams have been bad, really bad, and really bad for quite a while. And I don't know that there is going to be any appetite from the league or from those individual ownership groups coming in to be bad for that long. So all interesting things to watch. I would say the other main topic, and maybe I'm sensitive to that here in Chicago because we saw a very good young player get traded from the Stanley Cup winning team after it seemed like that was not going to be the case. But it's the idea of young restricted free agents coming off of their entry-level deals looking for big money, which, I mean, I think in both these guys' instances was very well earned, but looking for big money and their salary cap strapped, very successful teams not being able to afford them, and or, I think in the case of Boston, creating a non-existent personality conflict to justify making that move. But in my opinion, the two biggest moves of the offseason were the Chicago Blackhawks being forced to trade Brandon Saad, and coming up with, time will tell, but coming up with what seems like, all things considered, a pretty strong hockey trade. And the Boston Bruins, who I could do... I could do five shows right now, I feel like, if we're doing half-hour shows here on what's happened with the Boston Bruins this summer and sort of the concept that they've doubled down on under Don Sweeney. An awful summer, in my opinion, an awful draft, and trading Dougie Hamilton to the Calgary Flames. In so many ways, I guess we'll start with Boston first, in so many ways just a head-scratcher of a move. You look at the young star or potential star players that they've traded over the past 5 or 6 years, and yes, this is under different GMs, whether it be Peter Chiarelli or now under Don Sweeney, but all of them sort of under the auspices of a very hands-on Jacobs family owning the team. And Cam Neely, for the majority of those years, being the guy overseeing everything from a hockey operations standpoint. You look at trading an elite goal scorer like Phil Kessel, you know, parlaying that into basically Tyler Seguin and Dougie Hamilton, and then trading Tyler Seguin due to, you know, off-ice things and just their inability to handle him. Not getting full value back for him. I mean, Louis Erickson is a nice player, but he's never been a fit there. The rest of the pieces, I certainly wouldn't say have balanced out what Tyler Seguin has done in Dallas. And then trading Dougie Hamilton and, you know, getting a collection of draft picks back that I really don't think, when you look at how they drafted this summer, I really don't think they maximized those picks at all. And I think the idea was most likely when you have three picks in a row, what was it, the 15th, 16th, 17th picks, that you're going to try to parlay a package of those for, you know, a young player or a higher pick. None of that worked out for them. And you have a beaten up old defense in Boston that, Zdeno Chara is hurt again. You've got Dennis Seidenberg, who has a lot of miles on him, has a lot of injury problems. And beyond that, you've got Torrey Krug, and it gets pretty iffy after that. So, there, and you can, again, also, if you're talking salary cap, Dougie Hamilton was looking for whatever, 5.5 or 6 million from them. They said he was not outgoing enough in the locker room. It sounds like the locker room there has been a disaster over the past year or so. But their salary cap situation has been a disaster for quite a while. You can trace that back to, among other things, the Jerome Iginla deal, which was so heavily bonus-laden, and he met those bonuses that you had a situation where he was only there for 1 year. He didn't re-sign. And his contract, they were carrying, what, $3.5 million, $4 million, whatever it was, of bonus overage into the following season when he wasn't even there. He had moved on to Colorado, and that put them behind the eight ball. And it's just, with the salary cap not going up as much as was expected, the thought in late 2014 that was floated up by Gary Bettman was that the salary cap would end up being between $73-74 million. It certainly came in several million less than that, and it's put teams in a rough spot. So you can look at the Stanley Cup champions, as I mentioned before. The Chicago Blackhawks, a similar situation. This summer they've had to jettison Patrick Sharp. They weren't able to re-sign Antoine Vermette or Mike Richards. Several other pieces had to be moved out as well. And the guy that I think many people thought, particularly after the playoff run, was really locked into the much talked about core of the Chicago Blackhawks going forward, is a guy in his early 20s who, playing alongside Jonathan Toews and Marian Hossa, had developed into a pretty elite two-way forward. That being Brandon Saad, he's gone. And it's pretty crazy to think about, because after they won the cup, Stan Bowman was saying we're going to get this done. Brandon Saad was saying that money isn't the most important thing, and being in a position to win championships is. Time went by after they won the cup. It didn't get done. It got close to the time where offer sheets could be coming in, and clearly Stan Bowman recognize and knew that there was going to be an offer sheet or offer sheets coming, and he was able to pivot and make a deal with the Columbus Blue Jackets that looks pretty solid. You've got your from a Blackhawks perspective, you've got your second line center pretty much set now for the next 5 or 6 years with Artem Anisimov, a guy who seems to fit in with the way the Hawks play. They're going to have him starting up the season playing on a line with Patrick Kane. Depending on how the Patrick Kane situation obviously plays out, but then they also were able to get Marco Dano, who oddly is starting the year in Rockford. I could do an entire half hour on that. Marco Dano being in Rockford while Brian Bickell, who cleared waivers and could be sent down to Rockford, stays up with the big club. But Marco Dano, a guy who Columbus clearly didn't want to get rid of, a guy who was maybe only second to Ryan Johansson as the most effective Columbus Blue Jackets player in the last couple months of the season, when they went on a very impressive run, albeit out of the playoff race at that point due to their disastrous injury-prone season. But they were at least, if you look at what the Blackhawks were able to do as far as what they were able to get back for Brandon Saad, it certainly was a more impressive haul than what Boston was able to land for Dougie Hamilton. But still, you look at what Brandon Saad had done with the Blackhawks and what he likely would be able to continue doing going forward, and what he will do with Columbus as, I guess, one of the big two now with the aforementioned Ryan Johansson, and it is a loss. It's a significant loss. So, to me, those were the main stories, at least, that I focused on in the offseason. And looking ahead to the 2015-2016 season, it is the day of the season starting right now, so we really can't even say looking ahead. It's crazy that it's getting underway, and to me, from an on-ice perspective, I don't know that there's a more interesting aspect or angle to the season than the advent of 3-on-3 overtime. As somebody who watches a lot of AHL hockey, attends a lot of AHL hockey, I got to see this in action quite a bit last season. And the format was a little bit different. You had several minutes of 4-on-4, and then at the first stoppage after that, then you would have 3-on-3. And I'm sure as a lot of people listening to this have seen in the NHL preseason, you've noticed this as well. It is absolutely wide open, run and gun hockey, and at least for now, the thing that's probably the most entertaining aspect of it is we now have a part of NHL hockey that has not been overcoached to death, and so at least for the start of this season, coaches have not figured out a way to choke off the creativity of this sort of format, and so you're going to see so many different things. I mean, even just in the preseason in the AHL last year, we've seen every possible combination of defenseman and forward, or maybe not even a defenseman at all. Maybe you're just going with, you know, your three best forwards, your three top possession forwards, and just trying to win it right away. Going to and watching Blackhawks preseason games over the past few weeks, you know, it's been clear they've tried just about every different method. You had tons of 3-on-3 in training camp. You had you know, the league mandated 3-on-3 overtimes even after non-tied games ended. As far as in regulation, they were playing mandated overtime, and you would see, you know, there were some games or some scrimmages where, okay, you'd see Taves, Hossa, and Marco Dano. Then, you know, the next day, you know, instead of that, you'd see Taves, Hossa, and Duncan Keith. And then, you know, I think it was the preseason game in St. Louis, the mandated 5-minute 3-on-3 overtime actually went the full distance. And for every single shift, Quenneville sent out one forward and two defensemen. So it's clear teams are trying to work their way through it. Obviously, with so much open ice, puck possession is an even bigger driving force than at 4-on-4 or at 5-on-5. Winning the opening faceoff is huge. Having a goaltender that can that you can pass the puck back to be able to facilitate line changes is massive, because it's just so much harder to get a line change done when you have less players available to be that one guy waiting while the other guys change. And utilizing your goalie as well to be able to make an outlet pass and kind of be able to be a de facto 4-on-3, at least as that first pass out of the zone, is huge as well. I mean, you see that if that team that gets that first opportunity doesn't score, I mean, you're basically just having a pinball situation back and forth until there's a goal. I mean, you're just going to have, you know, 2-on-1s, 3-on-1s, 2-on-0s, breakaways, you know, each way. And that's why you're going to see considerably less shootouts. We saw in the AHL last year, I think it was somewhere around 74 or 75% of games ended. If they went to overtime, they ended in overtime rather than the shootout. And that was only with potentially a couple of minutes of 3-on-3. Whereas this, you know, you'll have up to 5 minutes of 3-on-3 every overtime game. And we saw similar numbers in the NHL preseason. I think it was probably in the upper 60% as far as games that ended in overtime rather than in the shootout. And that clearly is what the league wants. It's clearly what they're shooting for with this. So it seems like mission accomplished. It certainly is going to be entertaining, if nothing else. Beyond that, as I look at the clock, Aaron, as we actually are only getting close to a half hour into it, so we're not going to overstay the welcome of the show, as I said, but quickly, looking at each of the divisions, just give my predictions for division winners and maybe teams that aren't going to fare so well. Overall, in a lot of ways, I think that while we're seeing some of the bad teams get slightly better, and we're seeing some of the teams that have been at the top of the hill for a while, maybe starting to get over the edge of that hill and starting to come down a little bit, and I guess in some cases more than that. I don't see a huge amount of turnover as far as who the top teams are going to be this year, and who the bad teams are going to be. But in any event, we'll get through this exercise pretty quickly. The Atlantic Division. To me, there's only two teams. I don't know, I guess you could look at Detroit as well, but I look at this and there's only two teams that are really that I look at as being possible division winners. I look at Tampa Bay being the prohibitive favorite, coming back with basically the exact same team that they had last year, even with the Steven Stamkos contract situation for next summer hanging over their head. You look at their team and there's really, outside of injury, no reason to believe they're not going to at the very least get back to the conference final, maybe get back to the Stanley Cup final, and maybe win the entire thing. And then you look at Montreal, who's made a few moves, and they still have Max Pacioretty, Carey Price, and PK Subban. And when you get into the playoffs, I think it's been clearly proven that they're not they don't have enough goal scoring to compete with the Tampas of the world, and you have to rely so much on Carey Price to be absolutely perfect. I don't see any reason to believe they're going to take a huge step back in the regular season. And who knows, maybe Alex Semin rekindles a little bit of his past glory, and that gets them the goal scoring they need. But to me, beyond that, I mean, Buffalo with Jack Eichel coming in and with a lot of the other moves they made, they are certainly there's no way they can't be an improved team almost by default. But I still don't see them being a playoff team, and I certainly don't see them being a contender of any consequence. We talked about Boston. Florida, I think, is still trapped between being an up-and-coming team or just being the Florida Panthers. I mean, who knows with Ottawa after the insane run they went on to end the season last year. But I think they're a playoff team probably, but not a division-winning team. And then Toronto, Jesus, we could do several shows on that as well. Their summer of adding Mike Babcock, of adding Lou Lamoriello, which I just I don't see how that fits with the direction they've gone with Brendan Shanahan embracing, bringing in guys like Kyle Dubas and the guys he's brought in that are sort of on the analytics side of things. It just I don't know. Lou's more concerned about PA Parenteau getting his hair cut and sort of stifling social media than I think anything at this point. The Metro Division, it's funny because a couple years ago the Metro was really could have been the laughing stock of the league. And now, I mean, to me, you look at it, you've got Pittsburgh, you've got Washington, you've got the Rangers, you have the Islanders, and even a completely healthy Columbus Blue Jackets that I think could reasonably contend for the division. And I think those five teams that I just rattled off, I would almost be surprised if those five teams don't make it out of the Metro. And then you've got Tampa, Ottawa, Montreal, and Detroit competing for three spots among the four of them. If I was absolutely held down right now to make a decision, it's hard to pick against the Rangers. And I know a lot of people are picking Washington, and I think that's a solid pick, although I have a sneaking suspicion that the Pittsburgh Penguins are going to be right there with the Rangers, at least in the regular season. I like a lot of the moves they made. I like the way they've embraced their young defensemen. And I know a lot of people don't, but I actually really like the Phil Kessel move. So that's the Metro. The Pacific is, I think, still going to be a tire fire of a division. I mean, I look at it, and I know a lot of people are expecting LA to have a bounce-back season, but LA really never contends for the division. I look at this as really being, in a lot of ways, the way for quite a few years the Pacific was really Vancouver's division to lose. And I'm certainly not picking Vancouver to be that team this year, but just using that as an example, I think it's pretty obvious this is Anaheim's division to lose. I still have my doubts as far as what they're going to do in the playoffs, given the track record of their coach, his ability to handle goalies, what their goalie situation is, very good but also very young, and given what their top players and how they, as good as they are in the regular season, how they wilt late in big-time playoff series. But that none of that factors into whether Anaheim is going to win the division, and I don't think there's any reason to believe they won't. LA, I'd be very surprised if they don't make a push for the playoffs, but beyond that, I don't see Vancouver making the playoffs. Arizona's a disaster. Edmonton, for all the Connor McDavid excitement, which is warranted, and I think they're going to be improved. But I mean, at the end of the day, yeah, okay, so you went out and got Andre Sekera, but Andre Sekera is your number one defenseman. That's a problem. San Jose, I mean, who knows what they are at this point. Martin Jones is the starting goalie. It's now Joe Pavelski's team. You've got a new coaching staff there. Doug Wilson still is the GM. Hard to really know what's going on there. To me, the only team that could potentially throw a big monkey wrench in this division is the Calgary Flames. Do they pull a Colorado Avalanche and revert to statistical form, or are they onward and upward? I think the jury's still out, but I think I would be surprised if they regress to the point of Colorado, just because there's too many good young players, and they have such a good defense core with guys like Chris Russell, Mark Giordano, obviously, who I think was on the path to a Norris Trophy winning season before his injury, TJ Brody, and the aforementioned addition of Dougie Hamilton. I mean, they could end up actually being a team that really contends for the division lead. It's the goaltending situation there will be interesting to see play out. But yeah, that's the Pacific, and then the buzzsaw that is the Central Division. It's such an interesting division in so many ways. We talked about the Blackhawks and everyone that's been moved out. To me, though, watching in the preseason and just looking at the roster, I think people are going to be very surprised by, at least in the regular season, how much this team doesn't take a step back. You look at the guys they lost, but then you look at having a full season of a Teuvo Teravainen who looks... And he looked great in the playoffs. He looked so much more confident, so much more improved going into this preseason. You'd have to think sooner rather than later, Marco Dano, will be back up with the team. You have the addition of a guy who, anyone who knows me, anyone who follows me on Twitter, @Adam_Summers, anyone who knows me is aware of how high I am on Artemi Panarin, the KHL star from SKA St. Petersburg. Just won the Gagarin Cup last year with fellow new Blackhawk Victor Tikhonov. But what Panarin is going to be able to bring to the table as well, you're swapping out Johnny Oduya for Trevor Daley, who, while they are not by any means interchangeable defensemen, and bring completely different things to the table. Trevor Daley, he does bring something to the back end that they haven't had in the last few years. He's not as good defensively as Johnny Oduya, but to me, he's probably the closest thing to Brian Campbell that they've had since they got rid of Brian Campbell, and Brian Campbell is certainly a very good fit for their system. But you've got a Blackhawks team who I think has a legitimate chance to contend for the division, and then you've got Minnesota is basically what they've been. Nashville is basically what they've been. St. Louis is a great regular season team that you have to wonder if at some point, sooner rather than later, at least for the coaching staff, is it going to fall apart? I would put Ken Hitchcock at the absolute top of my list of coaches that are certainly on the hot seat. And to me, they're kind of trapped between, they've got two cores. They've got the David Backes, Jay Bouwmeester, that sort of older core group that hasn't necessarily gotten things done. They moved out TJ Oshie for Troy Brouwer, but then to me you've got that really young core of the Vladimir Tarasenko's, the Jaden Schwartz. He's not super super young at this point, but you could put Alex Pietrangelo into that mix as well. So you kind of wonder whose team is it. But you still don't have any reason to believe they're not going to be a good regular season team. You've got the Winnipeg Jets, who I think are. I don't know that they're going to be contending for the division, but I certainly don't think they're going to take a big step back. And then, to me, you've got the two biggest wild cards in the division and maybe the conference. The Colorado Avalanche, who they're loaded. Obviously, Nathan MacKinnon, Tyson Barrie, I think, is one of the most underrated young defensemen in the league. Matt Duchene, Gabriel Landeskog, you've got a ton of talent. Semyon Varlamov, for speaking about off-ice, I don't want to say issues because I think that's not strong enough. Maybe I'm too strong to say atrocities as far as off-ice issues over the past few years. But you've got a decent core of players, but I don't think that it's a lock that they're going to make the playoffs. And then you have the Dallas Stars, who are, you know, the ultimate run and gun, high octane offense. Adding Patrick Sharp this offseason to a forward core that already has Tyler Seguin, Jamie Benn, Alex Hemsky, Jason Spezza. But the question for them is defense. Yes, you have the emergence of John Klingberg. Yes, you've added Johnny Oduya. But do you have enough there to be able to compete in that division, particularly going into the playoffs? So tough to call there. I think it's going to be between Chicago and St. Louis in the division. Just to not be called a homer, I'll say St. Louis. But I don't know that that's going to make any difference. Should they meet in the playoffs, I still would lean toward Chicago in that mix. So with that, we've gone a little bit more than a half hour here, about 40 minutes worth of show. Hopefully you enjoyed it. You can always reach me at Adam_Summers on Twitter. Maybe as I hopefully build the audience back up for this show, we could even get the hashtag BHP radio going. But definitely feel free to tweet at Adam_Summers. Generally, if you have any show topic ideas, any questions or comments about the stuff we've talked about on the previous week's show, things that are going on in the league, I'm happy to talk to you on there, and use that to kind of spur discussion on this show. Obviously, it's not a call based show, so it's hard to be interactive as it would be otherwise. But I definitely want it to be a show going forward that is listener-driven or listener-informed at the very least. So with that, I'm going to close out the show and just say enjoy the hockey. We are here after a long summer. The NHL season is upon us. If you're listening to this, hopefully you're listening before things get underway. If not, hopefully you've enjoyed the first couple days of the season. And yeah, we'll be back hopefully next week or the week after. And I guess I'll close it by saying what I've said at the end of every show since we've started. Thanks for listening, and above all else, keep it simple.